You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia. This is the American Hour on the USA Talk Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. It's a big day for us. We've got Kathleen McKinley going to be calling in a little while. She's in Texas. And, of course, I've got, as usual, my lovely host, Paula Lozon-Ostman, with me. Paula, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Tom. How are you?
Good, good. Of course, you know that I don't know if I told anybody else, but I told you that I was going to be flying to Barbados over the weekend, and they were a little short on pilots, and I volunteered. We didn't really have any big Easter plans. We did want to go out to dinner, but that was okay. So it was nice there. The weather was nice. It was I don't really go out on the beach anymore because I really can't go out in the sun. I mean, I live in Florida. I can go to the beach anytime I want, and, you know, I've got a pool behind my house. I can go sit out by the pool and... But getting sun is bad, 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 bad. I've already had enough things cut off of me that I don't need any more of that. So I avoid the sun. Oh, we go out, but I put sunscreen on every time. So how was your weekend? What did you end up doing?
Well, we ended up going to a place called the Cenote in Hull, which is, you know, right by the beach. And we got to see some really cool blues, jazz music. I guess Jay Giles is coming to the club at the end of May. So we did a little dancing and we closed the place down sometime after 1 o'clock in the morning on Saturday.
Wow, you party animal.
Oh, yeah.
Well, good.
I had fun.
Excellent, because I remember on Friday you weren't really sure what you were going to do, but it sounds like you had a great time. Well, that's awesome.
Mitchell and the Texas Flood is who played Saturday night, and they were just awesome.
Excellent. All right. Well, just for listeners' knowledge, tomorrow and Wednesday I'll be broadcasting live from Sao Paulo, Brazil again. And in fact, I'll be doing that next month as well. I may change a few of my trips around just to add a little variety, but for now all of my trips are to Sao Paulo, Brazil. And then we're going to have somebody joining us tomorrow, Bella D'Angelo. She just started a radio show, and I kind of got her into broadcasting, and we're actually going to do some broadcasting together on her show, and she's going to be coming on our show to talk about her upcoming stuff tomorrow and Wednesday. So she's going to be joining us for a couple days, and I'm not sure just how long, but she's got an interesting background, and she's a pretty fiery conservative, I guess that would be the best way to put it. So she's always fun to talk with and chat with, and she'll be on the show joining us in the next couple of days. So she's kind of going to be our guest for the next couple of days. We don't really have a guest lined up, but Bella D'Angelo is going to be on there, and we're going to talk with her about stuff going on and her continuing upcoming shows as she gets started broadcasting. She's already got some pretty good listenership and some sponsors lined up for the show, et cetera, because she's pretty well connected in the conservative world, and we'll get to find out more about that and why. But in any case, that's going to be the next couple days. And, of course, on Thursday, we've got Dion Long. If you want to know anything about the fair tax, if you want to know anything about the gold standard, taxes in general, Dion is the man. This guy can tell you everything about it. He's read quite a few books about it. He studied it himself and analyzed it for several years. And so this is really, I think, a great time to be having somebody on the show with his knowledge about our tax code, about how our economy runs and the government influences it with taxation, et cetera. So I'm really looking forward to that. And, of course, he's a personal friend of mine, and I haven't had a chance to really talk with him in a while. So he'll be fun to have on the show. And he's a humorous guy, too. He can really tell a good story and get you laughing. I always like listening to him speak. So that'll be a great show. And then let's see, what else? Oh, I just was telling Paula that I may be on jury duty on Friday. I always like doing jury duty. And the last year when I got called up, I really wanted to go, and they said, don't bother coming in. So we'll see what happens this year. But if I'm in the jury box on Friday, then I won't be broadcasting. Of course, Paula will carry on without me. And, Paula, you're welcome to have anybody join you on the show that you'd like, or you can run with it on your own, but we will still be broadcasting on Friday. So, all right, so that's our lineup for the rest of the week. And a couple things I want to talk about. I'm in the process of putting together an article to talk about my experience going from a couch potato conservative. I considered myself always quite well-informed. I always researched candidates, propositions, et cetera, before I voted. So I consider myself a well-informed voter, not typical uninformed mass kind of person. So, but I had never been involved really in a campaign, just minor stuff, helping out some friends or some people on a particular campaign, but nothing huge, nothing serious. I went in a six-month period from being this informed couch potato to a congressional candidate. And so I'm writing an article about that transformation. And I don't know what the exact title is going to be, but right now the title is Political Activism and the Transformation of a Conservative. And I may throw the word couch potato in there. We'll see how that works out. Here's how I always do this. I write an article, then I let my wife look at it. I'll let a couple other people look at it. I'll let you look at it, Paula. Then we'll massage things and get it right, and then we'll... But I wanted to read a little bit of the beginning of the article for the folks out there to get a taste of what's coming. And so here's what I wrote near the beginning. In 6 months, I went from a couch potato yet an informed voter to a congressional candidate. And that's only half the story. Getting involved with politics other than voting and chatting with my neighbors turned out to be much more than I expected. But it was worth it, and I'd do it all over again, but not anytime soon. It all started when I realized that an inexperienced freshman senator was going to win the presidency on the cult of personality. Before he ever even got the nomination, I knew it was coming. I knew what was going to happen. And there are several things that concerned me. I'm going to read to you the probably my biggest concern here. But there were several other things that concerned me, and that's what's going to be the thrust of the article, and then how I went about trying to make a difference. And that trying to make a difference ended up leading me down the path to a congressional candidacy, and then led me ultimately to broadcasting here. And I'll explain, you know, the process from when I lost in the primary to how I got to here. And there are several things that happened in between there as well. Let's see, where was I? Okay. It wasn't just his inexperience that bothered me. It was his philosophy. His philosophy on society and government's rightful place in managing our society was very out of sync with our actual society and the type of government that was structured by our founders. In order to achieve his utopian views of society, we would need to dismantle our existing roadmap for success, in other words, the Constitution, right, and build a new system with endless regulation and power concentrated in the hands of a few. What does that sound like? Well, let's go back in history and take a look at Thomas Jefferson. Now, I'm not reading from this anymore. I'm just kind of ad-libbing. But this is now I'm reading again. This is nothing new if you are familiar with the history of politics in the U.S. Thomas Jefferson, our third president, was convinced that he saved the Union from the hands of monarchists when he was elected in 1800. Author of The History of the United States, 1801 to 1809, Henry Adams paraphrased Jefferson by saying, "His predecessors, in his opinion, had involved the government in difficulties." Tell me if this sounds familiar. "Had involved the government in difficulties in order to destroy it and to build up a monarchy on its ruins. These monarchists were the Federalists. Today we know them as Democrats." All right. I've got something to we've got a caller, but we'll get to that in a second. Then Abraham Lincoln warned us. He said the greatest danger to the United States of America would not come from abroad, but from within. If destruction be our lot, we must be its author and its finisher. He also warned that a politician would arise one day who would want the same kind of recognition as our founders. But Abraham Lincoln explained to us, that's already done. That field has been reaped. There's nothing left to do. And so here's what he said. Distinction will be his paramount object. His paramount object, distinction. Sound familiar? He would as much, even more so, do good as harm, but that time being past and nothing left to do in the way of building up, he will boldly set to the task of tearing down. All right, so there's a little bit from my article, and we can talk about that some more this week, and certainly with Bella. I know she's got some strong viewpoints on this. So we'll chat with her, and let's see. Did somebody just already call in, Paula? Oh, you got to put your microphone on. Let me grab you and do that. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I couldn't get a reply. I did ask a couple of times who was on the line, but.
Well, it says Marcus Marshall, but
yeah.
He wouldn't talk to you, huh?
He wouldn't, or he maybe he couldn't. Maybe he couldn't hear me. I don't know.
Yeah, well, we'll.
I can try.
I'll tell you what. I'll go screen the call. Talk about that article you sent me today. You sent me an interesting article about, you know, the differences between January 2009 and today. And this is what happens in presidential elections. You're going to have candidates that are going to stand up there and say, are you better off today than you were back in 2008? And
yeah.
This little chart you sent me. So go ahead and talk to folks about some of the highlights of that, and I'll be right back after I go see if I can talk to Marcus.
Okay. Well, a good friend sent this article after something that I had sent him. He said, we are paying a lot more for gas than is dictated here, and after 2 years, here's your change. An average retail price per gallon of gas in 2009 was $1.83. Today, according to the chart, it's $3.10. It's more than that. But again, this chart is slightly recent, but not too much. Unemployment rate. Non-farm overall, 7.6% in January. Today, it's 9.4%. Number of unemployed in 2009 was 11,616,000 people. Today, it's 14,485,000 people. Something that caught our eye as well. People in poverty in 2008 versus 2009, 39.8 million people. Today, it's 43.6 million people. That's a high number, especially in our country. Let's see here. New national debt in trillions, 10.627 trillion. Today it's 14.052 trillion. Again, it fluctuates. It goes higher as the day goes on. What else do we got here? Gold. Gold, $853.25. Today, it's about $1,500. As of this morning, I saw it at about $1,500 per troy ounce. Sugar, 13.37, 35.39 today. That is 164.7% change. Let's see. What else do we get here? Number of federal employees, ex-military, 2.7 million. Today it's 2.8 million. The real median household income, $50,112. 0.7% drop, $49,777 today. And did I touch upon the food stamp recipients? 31,983,000 back in 2009. Today it's 43.2 million. I had touched upon something this weekend some resources, and we've got about a million or so residents here in the Commonwealth. The number of food stamp recipients here in the Commonwealth was 800 and some thousand. I don't have an exact number.
Yeah. Wow.
It was just astronomical to me.
Jeez.
That number of food stamp recipients here in the Commonwealth was as close to the amount of people that we have living in the Commonwealth.
Jeez, that's amazing. That's amazing. Well, listen, Paula, we've got Kathleen McKinley on the line now. She's on air. How are you doing today, Kathleen?
I'm doing just great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. We got Marcus on hold, and he's from the U.K. He's calling all the way from the U.K. We're going to get him on here in just a minute because he's got an interesting question about separation of church and state. And then, Kathleen, I've been kind of promoting you as a gun-toting soccer mom. Is that accurate or not?
I think it would be more of a football mom, but yes.
Okay. Okay, good. But a gun-toting football mom, that's good.
Football mom.
you have a couple sons or a son that's playing football right now?
I have three sons and a daughter. That's right. But yes, my youngest now is 14, and he's at football 24/7. So yeah.
Wow.
That's
awesome.
What I do.
That's great. That is really awesome. So, well, we can tell by your accent you must be from somewhere, maybe in the South. I'm going to guess Texas.
What accent? What are you talking
about?
Yeah,
what a good guess, huh? So how long have you lived in Texas?
I have lived in Texas for about 27 years, but I was raised in Mississippi, so that may be the little bit of Southernness too that you hear there.
Yeah. I've lived in Texas before. That's when I was in flight school with the Navy down in Kingsville. That's a lovely place. And we'd frequently go to Corpus Christi on the weekends. I know that's nowhere near Houston. I had a brother that was living in Houston there for a while, and I never remember where he lives now in Texas. It's some little town, but he does actually live in Texas, but not Houston anymore. And I always liked Texas. One of my best friends growing up lived there for many, many years, and he's back in Arizona where we grew up. So the reason I brought you on the show is because you do some blogging and writing for a variety of – go ahead and tell folks what your background is as a conservative and kind of what you're involved in now. And then certainly let us know where your websites are, Facebook, email,
okay,
if people want to get a hold of you. I mean, you don't have to tell us anything that you want to keep private. But yeah, let people know how they can connect with you and find out and read about the stuff you're doing.
Okay. Well, I've been in politics for a long time. My father was in the state legislature in the 60s during the Civil Rights Movement in Mississippi. So I sort of saw that sitting on my front porch. It was a very interesting time to grow up. And my father was a Democrat, and we talked about politics around the table all the time. So when Reagan came in, I was in college, and he changed everything for me. I became a Republican, and over the next 10 years, I pulled my whole family over to the light side. And
wow.
I was very active in politics. The first person that I campaigned for was Jack Kemp, and I loved him so much, miss him. But anyway, so I was very involved in politics. I was very involved in the pro-life movement through my church. And I was a stay-at-home mom for many years, and I was the one who wrote letters to the editors all the time, you know. And
yeah.
So when blogging came along, it was the perfect fit for me because it was what I love to do. I love to write about politics. And so I started writing, and I called my site Right Wing Sparkle. And
uh-huh.
The reason why I called it that is because I thought that the word right wing was being demonized and that people who were considered right wing were being looked at as, you know, some kind of monsters. And I wanted it to show that, you know, a mom who's raised four kids with her husband and, you know, we go to church, we pay our taxes, we've never broken the law, we do good in our community. That's what right wing is. You know, that's kind of my feeling about it and why I started it. But then I changed it over to KathleenMcKinley.com, and the Houston Chronicle linked me quite a bit a few years ago, about 5 years ago, and so they asked me to be a featured blogger. So I started writing for them, and I also write for Right Wing News and Newsbusters, and that's really
awesome.
That's where I am, and it's really been amazing, the things that I've been able to do and go and see because of blogging. It really is a wonderful way to meet other people and to get involved, and I got involved in the Tea Party that way as well. So
yeah. Now, you also do a radio show, don't you?
Oh, yes, I do. I do for Smart Girl Politics, for people who are familiar with that. Smart Girl Politics it was started by a mom and a businesswoman who just thought that, like, the Republican Club, Women's Club, wasn't where young women, and when I say young, I mean between, you know, 18 and 60, young women who just didn't feel like the Women's Republican Club was right for them. They wanted to be more active, and she started Smart Girl Politics. So that's a radio show that's an offshoot from that. It's called Smart Girl Nation, and it's on FTR Radio every Wednesday at 8 p.m., and I co-host with Terry Kristoff and Molly Teitman. One's in Missouri, one's in D.C., and I'm in Texas, and we get together, and it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, very good. Well, I see, you know, on your website, KathleenMcKinley.com, and I'm going to spell that out for everybody. It's KathleenMcKinley. That's how you spell Kathleen McKinley. KathleenMcKinley.com.
Yeah.
You've got links. You've got an email address there, and I imagine people can find you from there on Facebook and everything else and see all the different
I'm
blogs
Kathleen
and posts.
I'm Kathleen McKinley on Facebook. And
okay.
I'm at Kat McKinley on Twitter.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I guess so.
Excellent. So we got all that out of the way. Let's, because Mark has called in right off the bat here, and he's calling all the way from the UK. Let's bring him on, and he wanted to ask a question. He saw that this was a conservative show, and that we're, you know, that you are and I am involved in Tea Party activities and some other things. So, Marcus, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. And
thanks for
holding
on.
Is Phil. The reason I use Marcus is simply on the grounds that I do play a wrestling app. I know wrestling's fake. I'm a big fan of the UFC as well, all that kind of thing. But, my actual character in wrestling is called Marcus, but my actual name is Phil.
I see. Okay. Excellent.
Yeah. So I am Phil. And one of the things that that really made me think, I look at the of how well that you've thought out your decision. But the one thing that I think of is that one of the things I've noticed in my own country is whenever America goes in one decision, after a couple of years, the UK follows and a lot of Europe follow what America is doing when it comes down to anything, whether it be fashion or religion. So I do notice a trend. And I've got to say, the question that I have is, why is it that the question that I have basically revolves around there should be a separation of church and state. From what I've seen of the Tea Party, and please do me a favor. If I'm wrong, then tell me I'm wrong. I would appreciate that. But I noticed that the Tea Party wants to bring together church and state. So why is it that the Tea Party feels it so important to bring together church and state?
You want to give that a shot, Kathleen? I've got a good answer for him, but you want to tackle that? Or?
Honestly, I've been involved in the Tea Party from the beginning, in here in Houston. Mm-hmm. And I think that what he sees is a perception that the media puts out there that really isn't there. Because I would say that, I mean, I don't know the percentages, but from my experience, and I've gone to Washington to many of the Tea Parties and everything, from my experience, I would say at least half of the people that I have met through the Tea Party are not religious at all. They are libertarian-oriented. They're very conservative. They may believe in God or they may not, or they may be agnostic. But they are certainly not what you would think is religious. In every aspect of it, I have not seen this Tea Party person. They always perceive on the media as being this, you know, highly religious person who wants to force everyone to be one religion or another.
Yeah.
So, see, I just don't think the premise is true. So that's my answer. What's yours?
Yeah, I would agree with everything Kathleen just said. But we need to clear one thing up in the history of our nation here. The separation of church and state was meant to keep government out of religion. It was never, ever intended to keep religion out of government. And, in fact, religion was highly involved early on in the history of this nation in government, particularly at the state level, not the federal level, but at the state level. We had state churches, state-run churches, because the folks wanted that, and the states, that there's no restriction. Well, we've developed a restriction on that because the Constitution only says that and there's no such thing as separation of church and state in the Constitution, but the Constitution says that the federal government will make no laws concerning the respecting the establishment of religion, but the states could. Now, it's over time, because of the Bill of Rights and misapplication of the Bill of Rights, we've now said governments, but the Constitution doesn't say governments. It says the federal government shall not make any laws concerning the establishment of religion. So the history of our nation is it was founded on religious freedom, and then the government was built upon that foundation. So that's really why you will see, to some degree, some folks out there, but I would agree with Kathleen, it's not a movement of any kind, but some folks out there that are bringing some religious concepts, et cetera, into their conservatism. So I don't know. Does that help you, Phil?
Well, not really, considering the First Amendment states that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof.
That's the federal government, but the states can. The states were allowed to back then when that was written. And we have Supreme Court activist judges who have now interpreted the Bill of Rights to then include all the states and local governments, et cetera. But when that was written, the Constitution was written, there was never meant to be any restriction on the states and their involvement in religion.
Plus, no one wants to make – I don't know anyone who wants to establish a religion for our country. No one wants to establish – no one ever talks about that. So it's sort of a moot point.
The second part
is what you forget is that, no establishment of a religion – but you cannot keep people from practicing freedom of religion either.
Exactly.
Well, I do have an issue with that simply on the grounds that there are a good few states in America that will not allow atheists to hold a position of politics.
No, that's not true. What state?
That's
name
not true.
Is
true.
That's not true at all.
I can name. Well, if. I will actually look into the names, and I will phone in next week, and I'll give you a list of the states.
Please do.
I do not have the list here, but I've
noticed
that.
That's the first I've ever heard that.
There was recently a politician who actually won control of a state, and his opponents are facing him and trying to get him out of that simply on the grounds that he is an atheist, and they are trying to push the grounds that church and state are the same thing. So obviously from where you are, you understand the situation of the separation between church and state, but there are obviously states who do have an issue with someone not...
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll wrap this up because we're going to get on to some other stuff with Kathleen, but do me a favor, if you find that, email it to me, and you certainly can call in next week. We'd love to have you on the show again, Phil. But send it to theamericanhourshow@gmail.com, and of course on the website you can find an email address there as well. It's the same one, but the American Hour Show at gmail. Yeah. Send me that, and we'll take a look at it, and that would be interesting. If there is some state trying to do that, I'm opposed to that. That's not right, and I'm opposed to that, but we'll talk about it and dig into it.
Well, it's nice to know that someone is open-minded enough to actually look at it and kind of go, you know what, if it is true, that's a crock of crap. But
you know what? I just looked it up, and it is North Carolina and Arkansas do have in their constitution that a person shall be disqualified for office for denying the being of Almighty God. I have never heard of that before.
Well,
there are states
that will not allow an atheist to hold office.
Well, here's what I would say. Now, this is where you have to end. And you probably have an understanding of our Constitution to some degree, Phil, but here's the deal that I love about the Constitution. It really restricts our federal government. The federal government could never do anything like that. They can't do that. The states have a whole lot more leeway, but the beauty of it is so much easier to fix a law like that in a state if the people want to versus people in the entire country trying to control the federal government. The federal government, and that's why our Constitution was written the way it was written, was to really shackle down our federal government so it was limited. But the states, much easier to control. Yeah. And so I don't agree with that personally, but if the majority of people in that state do, I do believe in state sovereignty. Strongly do believe in it. I disagree with that premise. But
I personally believe in open-mindedness, and I've got to say – I cannot give you the state in question at the moment, but if you go on YouTube and go into the search engine and put all as one word, cult of Dusty, he actually lives in a state that an atheist has been elected their councillor, and because of their state, his competition is actually fighting against the fact that he is councillor simply on the grounds that he is an atheist.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, call in. The next time you call in, we'll talk about this. Or actually email me and give me a time that you want to call in. We'll talk about it. And I'm going to dig into this myself. I find that interesting. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
But so anyway, Marcus, I mean Phil, or Marcus, both.
Well,
Phil, hey, thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. And shoot me an email and we'll get you on the show again.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Interesting stuff.
So proud of people in America being libertarian simply on the grounds that the idea of libertarian is perfect. It's allowing people to be people as opposed to trying to force religions upon people. the First Amendment actually says freedom from religion as opposed to freedom of religion. So it turns around and says, you can be Catholic, you can be Muslim, you can be Hindu, you can be atheist. Myself, I am an atheist. But yeah, I love the fact that it gives that freedom. And you get so many right-wing politicians in America saying freedom of religion when the actual term is freedom from religion. And so many people just hear something from politicians and they just believe it. It's not freedom of religion. It's freedom from religion.
Sure.
But
all right, Marcus. Well, listen, we got to go. But thanks. And please, yeah, shoot me an email. Give us a call again. Let me know when you want to call in. And we'll have you on the show for a while and talk about some of this stuff. All right?
Definitely. Right. It's been a real pleasure to get on your show and have you listen to me. So
sure. No problem. All right. Take care. Bye now. All right, Kathleen, sorry about that, but it was an interesting point, and that is funny that you found that.
I know, I'm surprised. Isn't it funny that someone like him over there would know that and think it's like a big deal, and we must all know about it and support it when we hadn't even heard of it?
Now he's not right when he says freedom from religion.
No, he's not.
I'm going to read it right out of the First Amendment. It says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom.
Right.
Now we get into speech, but it says of religion, and there's no separation of church and state. That was, you know, basically a bunch of baloney made up by a Supreme Court justice, and then we've pressed on from there. And we'll do a show one of these days talking about how the Bill of Rights has been used to now push restrictions on the federal government onto the states, and it's been done in several of the later amendments. To restrict, you know, a variety of things. We're not going to talk about that today, but in any case, so you've been having a drought there in Texas, a pretty significant drought. Have you gotten any rain to relieve that?
No, we have not yet, although Governor Perry did put out a declaration of prayer. Did you hear about that?
I did, and then you mentioned it to me. You sent it to me in an email, and I do know this. We had a significant drought in California back in the I don't remember if it was the late 80s and maybe early 90s. It was somewhere around there. We had about a seven-year period. It was pretty bad. And the government, of course, you can imagine, California, didn't put out anything, but a lot of the local churches kind of combined efforts, and there was the same sort of thing. Let's all pray and pray and pray and see if we can get some rain. And then I remember that April, after a lot of the congregations and Christian community had been doing that very thing, we got some of the heaviest rain in April that we had gotten in a long time. It just about abolished 1 month, almost erased 7 years of drought. So hopefully that
I thought it was interesting because, okay, I'm a very religious person. I'm a devout Catholic, but I was raised in a political household. And, you know, my father was a Democrat, more conservative than liberal, though, you know, in the times. But I sort of was raised politically first before I became religious. So when I hear things like that, like, my first reaction is always kind of like, just because it's funny that it kind of coincides with what the gentleman was talking about, is that, you know, although I do believe in the freedom of religion, you know, I would never want a theocracy. I don't think any of us would want that.
No.
So I always sort of, you know, get kind of queasy about it. But what's interesting was that after I read it, and I was like, have we done this before? You know, has the governor done this before? And so I went around and started asking some people that, you know, I knew, and most of the people that I know are religious, or at least they go to church, and they had no problem with it. They thought it was great and that there was nothing wrong with it, and, you know, we're a religious nation, and Governor Perry has always made his faith, you know, well known, just like, you know, Bush did as well when he was president, and so listening to them, I started thinking, well, you know, I think they're right. There isn't anything. Why should Governor Perry hide his faith or not, you know, here's something desperate he sees in his faith, I mean, in his state, and he feels like we should reach out in prayer for that. We're a prayerful people, and you don't have to, you know, if you don't believe in God, you don't want to pray, pay no attention to it. Go about your day. So
yeah.
I kind of changed my mind about it, you know, I feel kind of weird about it, and then after that, I started thinking, you know, I'm starting, you know, it's part of me getting sort of brainwashed by this whole separation of church and state, where they're like, oh, you can't do this, you know, it's so wrong. And then I was thinking, no, actually, there isn't anything wrong with it. You know, because if a man or a woman was governor and they weren't religious at all, and they didn't do the, you know, pray for rain, would I get upset about that? No, I wouldn't. You know, they can do it either way they want, whatever their faith leads them to do. So I don't know. What
right.
do you think about it? How do you feel?
Oh,
about
I think
it?
It's great. And I know there are people that will get offended by it, especially liberals. And this
yeah.
is what – this is the hypocrisy on the liberal side of things just kills me sometimes. You know, they want it one way, but then they want it another way. And we were talking – I don't remember what the issue was the other day, but Paul and I were talking about this, that, you know – but in any case, I think there's nothing wrong with it. And you made actually a good point. What if you have a majority of people in a state that are religious, and then – the governor didn't mention anything about that, when that is a viable option. If you are religious and you do believe, that's a very, very good option. You know, an entire state, especially the size of Texas, that many people getting down on their knees and praying to God and asking for some relief can make something happen. And so there's – so, you know, religious people could be offended if – the governor didn't suggest that. So, it, you know, you just got to be tolerant. That's the bottom line. You've got to be tolerant of your neighbors. And it really bothers me when I see folks that complain about a nativity scene or something else. You know,
exactly.
Don't look at it. Just keep going. Well, what if it's on government property? I don't care. Yeah, because government property is the perfect place to put something like that when it's Christmas time. We're all celebrating it. Even my
right.
Jewish friends are celebrating Christmas. Not Christ, but Christmas. But, yeah,
right.
keep Christ. We want to keep Christ in it. And that's really the point, is to keep Christ. So, anyway, I'm going on too far here. But I think it's okay, absolutely okay. And I'm sure that there will be some liberals offended. Well, that's too bad. You know, move to another state then. That's what I say.
Well, Governor Perry's not afraid of liberals, that's dang sure.
Yeah, well, that's good. Well, let me ask you this, Kathleen. Have you ever thought about running for office, or maybe you have done it in the past?
I have not thought about running for office, and I can promise you that after 6 years of blogging, there's probably too much they could use against me.
You know?
I'm very opinionated, and I say what I believe, and sometimes that can get politicians in trouble. No, I am not diplomatic enough to run. I have, you know what, my husband is a petroleum engineer, and, you know, he has a lot of engineering friends. I have always said, we should require engineers to run for office. Have you noticed that no engineers ever run for office? And even though they are so very intelligent and smart, you know why? Because they're too logical, and they will tell you exactly what it is, and they will tell you when you're being ridiculous and that this isn't a logical thing. They're like, you know, Dr. Spock on Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Mr. Spock on Star Trek. They just, you know, they are very logical. And so I think they can't fathom, you know, being, you know, going through this, you know, diplomatic back and forth, not saying what you really mean and not saying what's right because it's not politically correct or whatever. And but they are the ones who should be running for office. That is what I think we should just start recruiting them and get some logical, smart people in office.
Right. You're right. It is a
but
it
no,
gets to be a real game because you get people on your staff that are explain to Tom, you can't say this, no, you got to say that. And, you
right.
know, it's like, I just want to say what I really want to say. And, you know, oh, no, you got to be careful because it becomes a huge game. And I mean a game. And I didn't really enjoy that, so I didn't play it too much. But, yeah, you do have to be a little tactful at times with things that you're going to say or do so you don't get yourself in trouble. Because what will happen is, especially as conservatives, the media will jump all over you and make you look bad. When you're out talking about something really important and making some really good points, the media will ignore you. Generally, and I'm talking the liberal media, and that's a lot of the media. But then when you make any perceived misstep, oh, now all of a sudden you're in the news. And so, you know, I said something about the Tea Party groups in Central Florida at the time that kind of ticked a lot of them off. And then they realized, most of them realized I was right. But the Orlando Sentinel, which had given me very little coverage, all of a sudden put the video on an article. I wrote an op-ed for the F-35 alternate engine and why it was a waste of money and we shouldn't be doing these economic times. And online, they attached the clip of me talking about the Tea Party group as a way to sabotage me. So here's an article that has nothing to do with politics, but, you know,
right.
the economy, and they put that on there. And so I got a lot of grief for about 2 days, and then people realized what I had said was right. And then, you know, and here's the thing. I know in Florida, the Tea Party groups, as they got formed, were formed by people that had never been involved in politics other than voting, as I had said
right.
earlier in the show when I talked about myself. And so they were inexperienced, and it took them a while to get things figured out. I'm seeing these groups now in Florida really doing some good stuff and getting involved in actionable ideas versus just a lot of them were just simply vetting candidates, and they vetted them all the way up to the election, and they realized, oh, my goodness, we should have been doing stuff like 12 months ago, not just having candidates come and talk to us. And so they've learned, and that's great, and that's kind of basically what I pointed out. And I tried to warn them. I tried to tell a lot of the leaders in some of the different groups, you need to do this right now. And, well, but we don't, you know, we don't know if our membership wants to get involved, you know, and then they realized that although they did have an impact, I saw a lot of Tea Party-type groups and some that were actually very active across the country not get their candidate or their preferred candidate elected. They did get rid of the liberal incumbent in many cases, but they didn't get their candidate elected. And the reason grassroots candidates don't get elected or have a hard time getting elected, it's money. You know, I can come to your Tea Party group and talk and win you all over. Oh, Tom's the greatest thing. But, you know, you're talking, even if you have a large Tea Party group, and you may have one, how many members do you have of whatever group you may be involved in Houston there?
Oh, gosh. Between the Houston one and the Woodlands one, I'm not even sure of the number, but they are both huge. I mean, they fill the Raceway Stadium up here in the Woodlands. So it's big.
So it could be a few or several thousand total people that are interested in that organization.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
but
definitely.
When it comes to winning a district in Texas, you know, whoever's running for office has got to win 30,000 votes, not just three or four. And so that certainly would be very helpful, a group that big. But a lot of the Tea Party groups, you know, I mean, I got the endorsement of many of the almost every Tea Party group in my district, as well as iCaucus, the national organization that vetted all of us candidates, and I got the endorsement. And yet,
but when was that?
You've not heard of iCaucus?
No. I was like, when was it? I mean, this must have been recently because
It was just in the last congressional race. We had a lot of people in the race. And, you know, it really boils down to money because the uninformed, I call them the uninformed masses, the people that aren't involved in any kind of Republican club or Tea Party group, et cetera, they're just relying on the local media to tell them who's in the race and who these people are. They watch the TV ads, they get mailers in the mail, and all that costs a lot of money. And if you don't have that money, the other thing you have is people willing to work for you and help you on your campaign. And it's very hard getting people to do that. You get a core group of people that are pretty good.
Yeah. You keyed in on it earlier when you said that it was people who had never been involved in the political process. Because trust me, when I went to the first meeting in Houston, and I think Houston was one of the first Tea Parties to begin with, and it was before they were ever covered, I was in a room in a restaurant with a bunch of people where they literally passed the hat for money, literally. And I remember thinking at the time, this is a great idea. But come on, you know, in my mind, I've been in politics for a long time, but I thought, give me a break. So when it blossomed, I was shocked. And to tell you the truth, even though these people didn't know what they're doing and the ones you were talking about and, you know, they don't know the whole process, they're learning. And I guarantee you that the next time you run, it'll be a whole different story because these people are learning how to organize, what to do, how to do it. They're giving sessions. Here they give sessions on how to be precinct chairs, how to organize. And so it's going to be a different story every year because these people are learning and learning. I've never seen anything more amazing than the growth of the Tea Party and how much they've learned about politics.
Right. And you know what? And this is what's going to be great for conservatism and my passion, the Constitution, and that is we're going to have people that are organized and smart and actually know our government and our history versus the Democrats who just go out and load people up on a bus and say, you can't, you know, elect so-and-so because he or she's a racist, so you got to come. And they just blindly vote and follow their Democrat, you know, liberal leaders, especially when those liberal leaders are the ones that throw them a few bones here and there because they bring some pork home, or if they're at the state level, they get a few, you know, things for their little district there that keeps the folks kind of happy, and they'll just blindly vote for the party versus, but it's work and effort to get them out to vote. And whereas what we're doing on our side is we're becoming smarter and smarter and smarter, and that means we're going to continue to be involved. I don't think you're going to see the kind of conservatives that are involved in these groups now sitting home in any future election. Whereas you'll find people
right.
in some of the, you probably found them, Kathleen, in some of these Tea Party groups that would tell you, you know, I'm pretty good at voting, but I don't, you know, I haven't been that good in my life. But now, that's, I'm not only am I going to vote in every single election, but I'm paying attention to all the issues. So we've turned people into, you know, couch potatoes into very, very smart people and active people, whereas the left, you've got some folks like that, but as far as the masses go, no. They're just, you know, they're still just acting like sheep, basically, and treating them like sheep. And we're not treating our base like sheep. We're treating them like folks that want to learn and know more.
And this is why the left and the media have been so, had tried so hard to turn the Tea Party into a racist, you know, kind of organization where there was no evidence of that ever, which nothing ever happened, but they kept putting it out there, kept putting it out there. But since there wasn't that evidence, like, to back it up, I don't think it's stuck unless with it's with, you know, liberals themselves. But they tried so hard to destroy the Tea Party because they started to see what kind of power there was there. And,
right.
And
we're, well, that's a Alinsky tactic, and we all know about Saul Alinsky. And that's the play. The beautiful thing about that book is it's the playbook for the liberals. So we know what they're going to do. So if you're ever debating a liberal, when they start talking about racism or that, you could say, you're just pulling a play right out of Saul Alinsky's book, Rules for Radicals. It has nothing to do with the truth. It has nothing to do with,
right.
You know, this debate, et cetera. It's just a diversionary tactic, and his book is full of diversionary tactics. And it's a scary read. When you go and read that and know that this is how our president operates, you see it. The first time I read the book, it was soon after he'd been elected, and so we didn't have a lot to go on. But I've gone back and read it several times since, and it's like, man, this is their playbook. This is exactly the stuff they do. So, we're going to talk a little bit about some of those tactics tomorrow on the show, because there's a great article in American Thinker. It was April 24th, so just a couple days ago, or yesterday. The Government of the Big Lie, and it's got some interesting stuff in there. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow. But, Kathleen, one more time, people can find you at KathleenMcKinley.com, and that's where you do your blogging, and they can find out about your radio show and right-wing news, Tea Party information. Are there any?
The blog on the Chronicle is called Texas Sparkle, if they want to Google that. I'm all about sparkle.
Okay. Yeah. And then, of course, your email on the page there is rightwingsparkle@hotmail.com. And so people can send you questions and ideas or comments for maybe a future article, et cetera. Now, are there any groups? You mentioned a pretty big Tea Party group there in Houston and in another area. How can people, if they're in the Houston area, find out about that group? How can they find out when they're meeting and what's going on? Do you have that information?
Oh, it's Houston Tea Party. Oh, let me see. I wish I had that on the tip of my finger. I think it's tps.org. Let me look real quick. I think it is. Felicia Cravens runs that, and, oh, my gosh, she has done an amazing job of putting, you know, the Tea Party together. I'm trying to find the Houston Tea Party Society. That's what it is. So it's HoustonTPS.org. And, you can find everything about what's going on with the Houston one. The Woodlands is a North Houston organization, and it's very big, and it's well-supported. So that's why they really have just as many as the Houston. I think they're called North Houston Tea Party, if you want to look for that one, too. So both of them are great to get involved in. Great people, just the best people in the world on both sides. I just have really, when I hear them talk bad about Tea Party people, I really take it personally because I know these people, and they're so good-hearted and patriotic and just good people.
Oh, yeah. I met so many people during my campaign in so many different groups that I went around to, and they really are just, you know, average Americans. They're above average Americans now because they've stepped up to the plate, but they are just your next door neighbor, and they're nice people. They're wonderful people. They all have a variety of different jobs. Some are, I'm not going to go into it, but, you know, there's a wide variety of people. And some of the most interesting people that I've run into along the way are folks that have come to this country from other countries, repressive countries. One of the gentlemen that goes around talking, Ray Sanchez, he came from Cuba, and he's got some amazing stories to tell about that. And I already know, down here in Florida, I know quite a few people that have come from Cuba, and they tell me the stories. It's no paradise down there, and it wasn't even, you know, right after the revolution. And then, of course, we got people from other countries over in Europe, Western Europe, Eastern Europe, and they don't want to go back. I mean, they love where they came from, but this is the place to be for freedom and liberty. And they tell very, very good stories, and it's really nice getting to hear those stories. And it would be nice if our kids could hear some of those stories and have a better understanding versus what the liberal media puts out about how we're so screwed up and the rest of the world is, you know, really doing things right. So, and now I looked at your page, and I just wanted to throw this out for folks, you know, to tease them a little bit. You know, your last article was the Standard & Poor's report in plain language, and you spell out what came out in that. That's a nice read there. President Obama's missed opportunity in Libya. Donald Trump is nothing more than a self-promoter. And, you know, I was just telling Paul the other day.
Started on Donald Trump.
Yeah. I honestly think he's a Trojan horse meant to come in and disrupt things. He has never done anything conservative in his life or talked conservatively, and suddenly he is. And then, of course, the whole birther issue is a distraction, and it's made that the left uses it to try and make us look bad. Like, look at this, they're racist, and all they care about is his birth certificate.
Right.
And so he's keeping all that alive. I think he's a spoiler. I really do. I think he wants to see Obama get reelected. And that's why he's in this. And, you know, what if he were to actually get the nomination? What would he do then? Try and beat Obama? I think he'd laugh about it, and he wouldn't make any effort whatsoever to beat Obama, because I think that's why he's in this.
Wow. Well, I never looked at it that way. I really honestly just think of it as he is it's all about him. He just wants to promote his show and himself. And I think if he thought he could win the nomination, he would probably go ahead and do it because he has such a large ego. But he's embarrassing. He's not conservative, and it's ridiculous to imagine. I mean, he gave, what was it, millions and millions of dollars to Rahm Emanuel for his – just that alone is enough for me, just that alone. But,
right.
You know, he's all about whoever can do something for Donald Trump, and we don't need him. So he needs to go away.
Yeah, and that's most likely the true story, but I still think he may be a spoiler that wants to disrupt things. And certainly in the process, he can make it look like it's – I mean, he can promote himself, and that's what he does love to do. Now, Kathleen, how many people do you have following you on Twitter?
Oh, gosh, you know what? I haven't even looked lately. But last time I looked, it was about 5,500, I think.
Okay, that's not bad.
I haven't looked lately. Not bad.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's better than me. I just hit like 2,600 today. But and so I would tell people, you know, and Facebook as well. I think you've got like over 4,000 friends.
Yeah, I'm getting to that almost that 5,000 mark.
Yeah, and it is important that if you have a page. Now, do you have a page, or is it just your Facebook? You don't have like a separate, you know, page for your blogging or anything.
No,
like that.
You know, they give you that when you hit 5,000. It's called a fan page, and I just feel weird about that. I don't even know if I'll be able to do it. Because I have a fan page. You know?
Well, you can set up a page now that's an offshoot of your Facebook page, and people can start liking it. And if you do that, what I tell people, and this is where I'm going to do some self-promotion, go to the American Hour Radio Show on Facebook and like that page, because the media will come along and say, oh, you've only got 80 people that like it. Well, that doesn't mean there haven't been 1,000 people look at that page that day to see what shows are coming up. They're just not hitting the like button. So I do that wherever I go on Facebook, because it does help out, and it is somewhat important. And it's amazing how, you know, a couple years ago, I didn't even know what Facebook was, and now you've got to be. And Paula keeps telling me, Tom, you got to fix your LinkedIn account and start, you know, working that too. It's like, my gosh, all the social media is somewhat overwhelming
it's
sometimes.
It's killing you, right? Yes.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, Kathleen,
you spread yourself too thin.
Yeah. I apologize that we haven't this has gone so fast, and it seems like there's so much more stuff to talk about, but maybe we can have you back again in a few months, or, you know, whenever you feel like, okay, I can handle that show again. But it's been fun talking to you and getting your perspective, and I wanted to talk more about Texas and that kind of thing. But so maybe we'll get you back and let you tell us some of your political stories. You've been doing this for quite some time. I bet you got some good stories, some humorous stories, some interesting stories, some heartwarming stories. So we'll do that, and so it'll be less about current events and more about maybe what you've learned over the years and that kind of thing.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank
Excellent.
You for having me.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. And, time flies when we have a good guest. It always happens. All right, Kathleen, well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Appreciate it. Have a good rest of the week, and we'll be in touch.
Okay.
Good to meet you.
Bye-bye.
Kathleen.
All right, Paula, that was good. That was enjoyable.
Yeah, that was nice.
It went fast, and I do it all the time. I get talking too much because I love having these good. I can be a chatty patty when we start talking politics, and you know when. Well, you know, it's funny when we first got married. My wife and I, her family thought I was real quiet and real. you know, I mean, it was kind of like, well, we know who the talkative and, you know, I don't know. Control, not controlling is the right word, but the social person in the family is my wife. And to some degree, that was true back then. I wasn't a real social butterfly. With my buddies in the Navy and the airline, yeah, I'd get fairly sociable. But it took me a long time. It took me a while. And my wife was very helpful with this, breaking out of that mold of, I know aviation and flying and the military, and that's the kind of people I hang around. And when I'm around somebody that has no idea about that and no interest in talking about that, I don't know what to talk about. So I've changed, though. I know all kinds of things to talk about now. And so now when we go to a dinner party or anything like that, at some point my wife has to hunt me down and be like, all right, come sit with me for a little while. So that's kind of changed, so I have to be careful about that on the show. But in any case, I'm going to be jetting off here tonight to Sao Paulo, and I got to go catch the train that runs on biodiesel, and ride that down to the airport and conserve on petroleum. I don't want to burn any fuel in my car because it's too expensive. And we can,
yes, it is. It's still climbing.
It's got way too expensive. So, in any case, all right, Paula, it's been a blast again today. I'll see you tomorrow. We'll get some stuff together to talk about tomorrow, some current event stuff, and the American Thinker article that I talked about, the big government lie, and anything else that you find interesting, all right?
Okay, my friend. Have a good flight.
All right. Thanks, Paula. Take
You're
care.
Welcome.
Say hello to the family for me.
I will.
All right, so that concludes another great show. And, you know, if you want to go to USATalkRadioNetwork.com, go to my page there, you'll see some of the past guests. And there's if you go down and basically just click on anywhere that area with the list of past shows, there's some great shows that we've had, some great guests on there. And you can stream those things right there from the archive. You can also download them, put them on your iPod, on your phone. You download it via iTunes, and that's very easy to do. So whichever way you would like to do that, we'll have Bella D'Angelo on with us tomorrow and Wednesday. And then, of course, we're going to have Dion Long, my good friend Dion Long. I don't know if he's got a website or not, but you can find him. If you're on Facebook, go look for Dion Long, and you'll find him in the Orlando area and find out what he's up to. But we really look forward to that show. So everybody, stay safe, have a good week, and we will see you tomorrow.
Okay.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.